You know what's funny is now that you're telling me about the echo, I totally like was worried the last time that you could hear me swallowing and I heard it. It could be because I was looking out for it, but I heard it and I was like, no.
I never noticed stuff like that, I guess.
Hyper aware.
If there's a really long one, like if we're like, and then we start talking, oh.
That was so like cartoon like the way you did that. Like so exaggerated.
Because I didn't think it would be loud, so I wanted you to be able to hear it.
That was like how Popeye swallows the spinach.
She's kind of creepy.
Which one?
The white one, Stella.
Oh yeah, she is creepy. She's like beautiful,
Yeah,
but
but
in
like
a haunting,
spooky.
like
Yeah, I
alien like
know.
way. Not a normal cat way.
Mm-mm.
She's also mean as fuck.
Yeah, I believe that. All right, guys, full disclosure for episode 3, we're in a different location with different animals. So you might
Yeah.
hear some
We're
of
not in Raina's apartment. We're in my trailer in the trailer park.
them.
So who knows what kind of sounds you may hear. But to set the mood, I've got a blessings incense going and a really cool candle for purity and protection. And it's a white candle with all
Cute.
kinds of like crystals inside it.
Fun.
Yeah.
I love that. And we had a little charcuterie night. So we split up the charcuterie and had like a little makeshift charcuterie. And we're pretty stoned if you guys can't tell. So what we had was Levity Cannabis Spirit, Agave High Water. This is distributed by Levity Beverages in Charleston, South Carolina, and it contains less than 0.3% Delta 9 THC.
So like the whole bottle, it's supposed to be like a tequila equivalent. But the whole bottle is 50 milligrams. So each shot is around like two, how many ounces is in a shot?
1.5 in North Carolina.
Okay. So each shot is a little less than 2 milligrams. So you can
Can you bring
have,
that closer to
okay. So every shot has like about 2 milligrams in it, so that you can have it like a normal drink and have multiple of it. And it's supposed to be like fast acting, which I think is true because we are getting a lot stoned.
Yeah.
And it tasted like pretty good.
Yeah, it tasted pretty good. It smells amazing. I love the way it smells. And it's delicious, honestly. We made some basically fake strawberry mojitos, and it was delicious in it. And we're still sipping on it.
Raina put like fresh rosemary,
Mint,
mint,
lime,
lime,
strawberries.
strawberries. Oh, delicious.
So, yeah, we did it up for you guys for episode 3 because this is also, surprise, our 2 week listen party because
Yay!
we have 2 episodes out and we've been out for 2 weeks now and we have over 50 listeners, which is pretty cool. I know it's really small, but it's pretty sick to us.
We're really jazzed about
We
that.
are.
Also, to celebrate the third episode, I'm pretty sure Raina put 3 shots
I did.
each into our
I did. I
drinks.
put 3 shots of the what the fuck is it called?
Levity.
Levity. I put 3 shots of the levity in each of our drinks. And we had a joint. Or a
Yeah, a
yeah.
half?
Yeah, joint. No, 'cause we
Yeah, like a
Yeah.
joint.
Yeah. We had like a joint. So and we snacked a lot. So we're super ready for this episode for you guys. I'm
We
very
are
excited.
full of meats, cheeses, and horrific
Grapes
stories.
and a lot of grapes. Definitely horrific stories, though, because my story today is super fucking interesting. I always get really excited when I find a story that I have never, ever, ever heard of until I find the story.
Oh, me too.
Because a lot of the stuff that I've done, I've, like, heard from somewhere else, or I started hearing about it somewhere and then started to learn more and all that other stuff. So this is one of the first ones I've found in a while that I had never heard of before until now. So I wrote out a little list preemptively when we were planning the show out because I wanted to kind of figure out what I was doing ahead of time.
Good call. You're so smart.
For episode 3, I put cult, and in parentheses, I put don't know which one. So I went on this search to find a cult that was interesting enough to me that was, like, unlike anything that we've already heard. Like, I mean, Charles Manson family was basically a cult, you know, Jonestown cult, like, you know, Scientology cult. We've heard of cults. We know of the cults, the big ones.
Oh, yeah. But we haven't heard of... I was just watching a TV show about them.
Yeah. We haven't heard of a lot of them. And so I went on a little search trying to find a cult that was interesting that piqued my... To try and find a cult that piqued my interest. So in my little search, I ended up finding one that I originally was just going to stick with. I was like, you know what? This is weird and interesting. Fine, I'll stick with it. And I honestly, I didn't even write it down. I don't even remember what it was. But
the anticipation is killing me.
But I do remember that it was a man that was obsessed with coconuts. It was like cocathology or something like that. Like, it was silly. It was super silly. And he believed in, like, free living, like living naked and like shoes or chains for your feet, man, kind of stuff. So, and it was like a whole cult. But then I found another one.
Okay.
That I thought was a bit more interesting. Because I'm going to spoil it a little bit ahead of time. It is female led.
Ooh.
In the 1920s.
Okay.
So I've never heard of a female led cult, and maybe I just don't know enough about cults. I'm very interested in cults. I weirdly have a really big asphyxiation with them, but I've never heard of a female run cult. So
I don't think I have either, honestly. Like, the only one I can think of, and I don't even think I would call it that, is do you remember did you watch American Horror Story?
Yeah.
Did you remember in the cult one, Valerie Solanas? And she had the, she was with Andy Warhol, and she had that scum manifesto.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of. And it sounds like this is, like, predates that by a while.
Yeah, yeah, by a long while. So, today I'm going to be covering the Blackburn Cult.
Ooh.
And it's taking it, like I said, way back. It's to 1922. And to kind of put into perspective what this time was like already, just like how different it is from today's world. And if you really try to, if you want to try to understand, you know, why she did the things she did, like maybe put yourself into the shoes of somebody who lived in the 1920s and like life was already really strange compared to what we live now. So I'd imagine it was pretty easy to find something else pretty interesting. But so to put this into perspective a little, I read a list of a couple things that I found that I found intriguing about 1922.
Oh, yeah. So, set the scene for us.
In 1922, only 14% of homes had bathtubs.
Okay. So they were just stanking all the time.
Yeah, they weren't really able to shower much. Or bathe much, I should say.
Gross.
So the average U.S. wage was 22 cents an hour.
Okay.
Kind of insane. 90% of doctors had no college education.
Sounds like you should do some cocaine about that.
That'll fix you right up.
Broken arm, cocaine.
Have one of these Coca-Colas. It'll get you going real well. Only 10% of adults could read.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's I think a big one that sets the scene for me too. And then lastly, the five leading causes of death in 1922 were pneumonia and influenza.
Okay.
Tuberculosis.
Of course.
Diarrhea.
Oh. The silent killer.
Well, and then right after that is heart disease.
Oh.
The actual silent killer. And then strokes. So diarrhea was third on the list. People were dying more of diarrhea than they were heart disease and strokes.
You know, I would assume that's because of water quality.
Yeah, like they were just really dehydrated.
Yeah.
Like,
they're drinking the water. It's giving them the run.
Yeah. God. Yeah, I almost had to go to the hospital recently because I was severely dehydrated. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So drink water and drink room temperature water because your body metabolizes it better than cold water.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And liquid IV is a lifesaver. I fucking love that shit. I
love liquid IV.
Yeah, so. Anyway, yeah, so that was like the time when the Blackburn cult arose. It was also known as the Divine Order of the Royal Arms of the Great 11 or Great 11 Club, which I like that one better. That one sounds kind of badass.
That does sound badass.
So it was a mix of Christian Science, mind over matter, and outright paganism. And again, it was formed in 1922 by May Otis Blackburn. Pretty sick name, not gonna lie. And sort of her daughter. Her daughter was like a big part of it, so I'd say that they like started it together. I think
that's cute. What a bonding exercise!
I know, it's kind of crazy.
Let's start a cult.
Slay. Anyway, they proclaimed that they were being spoken to by actual angels, and those angels were Gabriel and Michael, to be exact. And they both said that they declared them to be the two witnesses described in the book of Revelation 11:13. And it's been proposed that the two witnesses are the witnessing church because Jesus sent out his disciples two by two.
Okay.
So they were the two chosen ones.
Gotcha.
So they also said that they were told to publish a book of divine knowledge and revelation. So like they had all the answers. And the book was initially titled The Seventh Trumpet of Gabriel, but they later changed it to The Great Sixth Seal. So they lost a number. Don't know what happened there. Apparently they lost a little bit of credibility, but they lost a number somehow. So the book would also reveal lost measurements that pinpointed hidden riches and oil deposits. So their book basically revealed the truth and mysteries of heaven and earth and life and death, as well as secret places for treasure and oil.
The Fountain of Youth.
Yeah. So from that idea, they actually started gaining a following. So they haven't fully published anything yet. They've just like started telling people, you know, I've been told by Gabriel and Michael that I have to write this book of Revelation and I have all the answers that you need. So if you come help me, you know, put your money towards this and come help me in some way, then you will gain from this and you'll be saved when the apocalypse comes.
Oh, of course.
So they, at that point, they began siphoning money from their disciples.
Now, is this like a mostly female in attendance?
No, it's just like anybody.
Oh, okay.
But it's just run by two women.
Gotcha.
So, Ruth reported to have been an unsuccessful film actress and dancer.
Mm.
There's a lot of quotation around dancer. There's a lot to like insinuate that that's not necessarily what she was doing.
She was an entertainer.
Yeah, so I don't really know exactly what she was doing, but it was heavily implied that it wasn't really like dancing. So she was said to have had no problem attracting men and had already shown talent for extracting money from them.
Okay, girl boss.
So
love that for you.
So far, a lot of the people that I know that listen to us are female, so hopefully we don't get canceled by the male audience for that, but I just think that's so funny. Anyway, so so one Blackburn follower was Clifford Dabney, a nephew of an oil magnate.
The nephew of an oil.
Whoa.
Children, behave, please.
The nephew of an oil magnate. And he turned over $50,000 in cash and assets to Blackburn, which in today's value, so in 1922, $50,000 in today's money would equate to about $857,795.
Okay, so that's like no small thing.
No,
to
that's a that's a pretty pretty big chunk of something.
Hmm.
So in return for this enormous donation, essentially he was promised to be among the first to see the Blackburn's book. With its lost treasures and everything ahead of publication.
Wow.
So if you give me, yeah, if you give me $50,000, bro, I promise you will get to see the book first. Like, on God, literally, he told me so. You'll get to see it before everybody else.
Well, how else are you going to get to the treasure first?
Like, God really wanted to give you a head start on getting that treasure, dude. So I promise. You'll get to see it first.
I'm
just
guessing
wait.
She tied his shoelaces together.
So among the money and like among the assets that was just like explained, Dabney donated to Blackburn 164 acres of land in the Santa Susana area of Simi Valley in Ventura County. So not only did he give her a bunch of money, he gave her a shit ton of land.
I wish a man would.
So sometime later, Blackburn and her younger husband, Slay, whose name was Ward Sitton Blackburn, who apparently, according to Blackburn, was the North Star of the world.
That's generous.
I know. You're like, that's kind of a lot, but okay.
If I see a picture of him and he's ugly, I'm going to be so mad.
He wasn't too ugly. I lied, actually. Yeah, never mind, actually.
Oh. It's the North Star or something.
Generous. Okay. So this will also make you feel a lot better about how he looks. So like I said, she's like, he's the North Star of the world. He was also her stepbrother. And
no.
hold on, it gets worse. And a pedophile.
Oh boy, there it is. At first, I was like, okay, life with Derek.
Stop. I think about that show often because why would they do that? And why did it go on for as long as it did?
You know, it used to come on like late at night sometimes.
Yeah, because they didn't want anybody to see it.
Exactly. And I remember thinking as a child, this isn't right.
Yeah, their tension is weird.
Yeah.
Oh my god, okay. So all around, great pick, great choice. She's doing awesome. She's thriving. So he led cult members to build cabins on the donated Simi Valley property where cult members would take up residence awaiting the return of Christ. That was their job, was to build the land, live there, and live for him through her, essentially.
God, why does every cult want to await the return of Christ? Can't they think of anything more creative?
They're like, it's happening now. Right now.
It's the biggest game of chicken I've ever seen.
So All the cult members also constructed a temple on the property featuring an elaborate guided throne that was reserved for Christ. And I didn't see pictures, but the description is definitely like giving Midsommar. Like, wow. That's what I picture when it's described. So, cult members residing at the property were compelled to work at a nearby tomato packing house and turn their pay over to the Blackburns. Of course. So, I guess at night some members would wear robes and, like, gather for rituals in a natural amphitheater on the property. So they, like, decked the place out so that they could have these crazy cool rituals. Right, but on. They would, like, sacrifice mules. And according to some people, would, like, dance in the nude, which is, like, whatever.
It's just standard cult stuff.
Standard cult stuff. So it was alleged that one cult member was placed in a hot brick oven in order to cure an illness.
Oh my god.
And they died as a result.
Well, that'll cure everything.
So jump forward to 1925 on New Year's Day. 16-year-old cult member Willa Rhodes died from a severe infection as a result of a toothache. So Blackburn assured her grieving parents, who were also cult members, and they were her adoptive parents, that the girl would be resurrected to life after 1,260 days, and her book was published. So after 1,260 days and the book is published, she's going to come back to life. Don't even worry.
That's such a specific number.
I know. It feels strange. So after the published book, after the days, she'll come back to life. So they had to preserve her body for that event.
Oh, no.
So her body was immediately placed in a bathtub to be preserved with ice, spices, and salt, which is super fucking witchy.
They were just gonna salt her body like she was a beef jerky.
Well, hey, maybe those Harvard students could sell human jerky.
They probably would.
Look at that. We're tying in past episodes to future episodes. It's crazy. Anyway, so 14 months later, when the girl's parents moved back to Los Angeles into a home in Venice, they brought Willa's preserved body with them and placed it in a metal coffin beneath the floor of their house. Also, I just want to, like, clarify for a second that Willa was preserved on ice for 14 months and then put in the coffin beneath the floorboards. And it took 600 pounds of ice a week to preserve Willow's body. And no one had, like, household freezers back then, so they had to always go out and get ice.
How are they even affording this? Especially giving all their tomato job money to the Blackburns.
I would assume that maybe they're, like, helping preserve her body.
That's wild. Also, like, I can't imagine any store is like, oh, yes, I readily have 600 pounds of ice available.
I don't really know the logistics of it, but I would assume, like, they made it clear to the parents that Willa was important. So she needed to be preserved for this resurrection because she was going to be an integral part in the apocalypse and the resurrection of Christ, essentially. Like, they...
This is some wild shit.
Yeah. She twisted some stories pretty heavily, but adjacent to her coffin was another coffin containing sacrificed bodies of 7 puppies.
What? What? How could that be what Christ wants? Why would Christ want 7 puppies? That's just such an insane thing.
So they claimed that it was to represent the 7 tones of the angel Gabriel's trumpet.
Okay.
So they killed...
Is that a thing?
Yes, it is. Okay. It is a thing in Christianity that Gabriel's trumpet rings essentially at the end of the world. And each ring brings a different catastrophe for the end, like for the end, essentially. Oh. And the last trumpet sound opens up the like depths of hell, and
wow,
just has
hot.
Like this pit that you just essentially
everybody
fall
get
straight
in the pit.
Open up the fucking pit. A bunch of people, the way that they got caught is a bunch of people were basically just getting tired of May's empty promises and saying that, like, she's being like, oh yeah, my book's gonna come out, you know, the apocalypse is happening, all these other crazy false things, and people were like, okay, none of this is happening yet. So they filed charges of fraud and theft against Blackburn for as much as $200,000, which in today's money is $3,431,179.
Wow.
Yeah. As allegations emerged of her fraud, more allegations of unreported deaths and disappearances came up. So police expanded their interests, and after inquiring with Willow's parents about the disappearance of her, the father broke down, leading the cops to the makeshift mausoleum under the floorboards. And his wife insisted that Willow wasn't really dead.
Oh, she was so delusional.
Yeah, so she said that she wasn't really dead, and that she also wasn't just Willow, but she was the Tree of Life. A celestial princess and the future queen awaiting resurrection. So May pumped their heads full of this idea that when she resurrects, she's going to be the Tree of Life and she is going to be the resurrected queen. Like,
that's so messed up to like get in those grieving parents' head.
Yeah. So four other cult members were also reported to have mysteriously disappeared, including Samuel Rizzo, Ruth's husband, who was said to have hit her.
Okay.
And it was said that he was poisoned. Which, like,
he had it coming.
He had it coming. yeah, I don't really... Girl boss. Like, I don't... That's all I have to say.
This is such a Gaslight Gatekeep girl boss story.
It really is. They really are. They invented girl boss Gaslight Gatekeep.
You know, I think it's funny with cults, like, there's only a finite amount of time before their promises don't start to happen. People start to get suspicious.
Yeah.
People get antsy. And that's when they, like, lose all the control.
Yeah. Well, if you take that on a smaller scale, if you've ever been in a relationship with a narcissist, you know exactly what that's like. That's essentially what it's like in a cult, is everybody is in a relationship with a narcissist.
Yeah. And a lot of the time, sexually.
Yeah. Narcissists want to control you, and they want to be the only thing in your life that matters, and they want to be the only thing that your life centers around. And when they start to lose that grip or that sense of control, they'll try to isolate you, and they'll try to put stuff in your head. They'll gaslight the fuck out of you. They'll love bomb you. They'll do anything that they can to keep you in their control. And it's the same thing with cults. They do everything they can to keep you within their control, including isolating you and gaslighting you
and taking all your money.
Yeah, like, it's not any different. So if you're a girl who's been in a relationship with a narcissistic person, if you're a person who's been in a relationship with a narcissistic person, I don't think you'll ever have to worry about getting in a cult.
Yeah. You know all the warning signs.
Among the four people missing, one of them was Frances Turner, who was paralytic and unable to speak, and she died after being treated in a cult-created stone oven for 2 days.
Oh my god, that's... oh no.
Yeah, so they're like, we'll just put her in there for 2 days and she'll come out fine. and she came out dead. So
what?
Big miscalculation there.
I mean, what did they expect?
I don't know. I really don't. She's freaky looking. I love her, but she's like freaking me out.
I know. My cat is so serious. She just stares at us.
She looks pissed.
One getting ever closer.
So another one was Harlene Satoris, who had come to the Great 11 after having been released from an asylum in Oregon, having both medical and mental issues. She died from either a gastric illness or heart troubles on colony grounds. And Catherine Bowles was never found and may have never existed. There are no records of her, like, anywhere aside from newspaper articles. So she might actually not be real. So there might only be three people that were missing. But in 1930, Blackburn was convicted on 8 of 15 counts of grand theft. She remained out of jail on bail, pending appeals. And in 1931, the California Supreme Court threw out her conviction, ruling that the evidence used in her conviction, although clearly demonstrating unconventional and even possibly offensive religious practices, failed to establish that she did not sincerely believe in her pronouncements and promises, and that she did not take money from followers with the intent to steal it, basically.
Sure.
So the High Court ruled that the victims appeared to be of sound in mind when they willingly accepted Blackburn's teachings.
Oh, you mean all the people with mental disorders who had just gotten out of asylums? Those people were in their right minds? Oh my God, this is awful.
So the court basically said, at worst, the victims suffered from their own bad judgment.
Damn, that's ice cold.
Yeah. So the court cautioned that the approach used to prosecute the specific charges on the in the Blackburn case was a dangerous encroachment on religious freedom as protected under the U.S. Constitution.
Oh,
which
course.
I feel like is like the one time they did that.
Yeah, right?
Like, I don't think I've ever heard of another case where they were like, you know what? They really fucking believed what they were telling you, though.
Yeah.
I can't charge him for that, dude. Like, what the fuck was going on? So.
Did the daughter get charged with anything or just the mom?
Just the mom.
Hmm.
So, as a result, Blackburn was exonerated, but the publicity and scandal around her case, like, decimated her following. And in 1936, she finally published a book titled The Origin of God.
Wow.
And then she died in Los Angeles in 1951. So, one, didn't use any of the titles that she was told to use. Not the higher number, not the lower number, none of them.
No numbers.
No numbers. And this book also probably did not do anything that she promised it would. And also, she died in 1951. No apocalypse happened. So, suck it.
Damn.
And that's the story of the Blackburn cult.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I know throughout time there have been books that claim to, you know, have all the answers.
Yeah, of course.
But it's so interesting that, like, she didn't even try to put out anything. Like, she could have lied. She lied about everything else. She could have just wrote a book to make the people happy. She literally was just like, no.
Yeah. That's why I wanted to put the time, like, kind of into perspective. Like, think of, like, what their daily lives might have been like, making fucking 22 cents an hour and not having a bathtub. You know,
yeah.
Like, it was probably such a hard time. Like, it was the 20s. It was the roaring 20s. So depression, it was depressing. That's why they had parties and got drunk all the time, because it was too fucking depressing.
Well, so, that was before the Great Depression.
What? No,
20s.
I know.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm saying it was depressing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's why they drank and, like, had parties, because it was fucking sad. So, I guess I could, like, see how they got sucked in. I'm surprised I've never heard of her, though.
I'm surprised about that, too.
Yeah.
But the being illiterate thing really makes sense. Because, you know, for... I fully believe that's why religion is so popular, is that back in the day, nobody could read. They had to go to church to hear the Bible. I'm serious. Yeah, that's true. So, that's like, true. You took everything at face value because you couldn't read it yourself.
Yeah.
And so in this time where...
Yeah, they could have told you anything.
Right. They could have told you anything. They probably and said did. That was in the Bible, and you'd be like, yeah, okay. Because you literally, like, don't know any better.
Yeah, they probably did make up shit. And they yeah. were like, the Bible says that men can't kiss other men. Everybody's like, whoa, yeah, that makes sense.
Whoa. Okay. Well, we were just two dudes chilling in the hot tub.
Five feet apart. Because we're not even gay, bro. She is getting airplane ears and getting all sorts of angry over there. Yeah, so there's a female-led cult that unfortunately was probably responsible for a few deaths. And didn't really do anything too crazy.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, she didn't really, like, accomplish a whole lot. Yeah, except for it that didn't... land.
I feel like when you have a cult, you should have, like, a 5-step plan, you know?
Oh, call.
Like, what do I plan to accomplish in the first 7 comings of Jesus, you know? Like,
that many times? Wow. That's impressive.
Jesus is in it for the long run, dude.
He's no got stamina for time. Days.
Yeah. He's got stamina for fucking days. But there we go.
That was so cool. I have never heard of anything like that. And it's good to know that women can be narcissists too.
Oh, I've met plenty of women that are narcissists, so yeah.
Well, do you want to take a little break?
Yes, let's take a little break. Let's smoke a little. Let's maybe drink a little more.
Yeah, and then finish up those mocktails.
Yes, and have some cookie.
Ooh,
all right. We'll be right back. I tried writing my notes on paper this time.
Yeah.
And it was coming out really good. It looked really cute. And then I finished the first page and I was like, man, I don't want to keep doing this. So I switched to the computer. Yeah, I did a little, like, small money manifestation. Because I saw one on TikTok. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll try it. And I had a client this past week who didn't tip me. Which, like, it happens. You know, you don't have to tip. It's nice to tip.
Always appreciated.
Yeah, but you don't have to. I get it. It was also, I think, her first tattoo. So I don't think she knew that she was supposed to. But she ended up messaging me today asking for my Venmo. Because she was like, I didn't know I could tip you, so
that's sorry. Really sweet.
Yeah, so that worked out pretty cool.
Well, welcome back. We are freshly
stoned, restoned.
We toked
and talked.
We munched
and crunched.
You're so fucking cute. I love you. Okay, so the story I'm going to talk about today, this is another North Carolina story.
Yay.
And this is a murder.
You're making me so excited to live in this state.
There's just something about the ones from home that I love.
There's just something about this one. I don't know.
Okay, so... the year, I'm also taking it back a little bit, not quite so far as you did. The year is 1969.
Nice.
Nice. And a college professor at Mars Hill University,
oh,
Richard
no.
Hoffman.
No. No. So, this one hits too close to home and you know it.
Just you wait.
Aww.
So in 1969, college professor at Mars Hill, Richard Hoffman, requested volunteers to come to Madison County to help clean it up a little.
Okay.
So, like 8 volunteers were sent from VISTA, which is the Volunteers for Service to America or something like that. Volunteers in Service to America, I think. They kind of work with, like, poverty, education system, food banks, just kind of all around helping out. Madison County is in western North Carolina. It's in the mountains, and it's got a real, like, reputation. It's called Bloody Madison due to a incident during the Civil War where a Confederate soldier or general or something like that had a bunch of Union prisoners and, like, killed them all.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and this is, you know, backwoods mountain town. So he was like, hey, we need some help. Like, yeah. Come help us.
All right.
In October 1969, Nancy Morgan and seven other volunteers from Service to America arrive in Madison County. So Nancy Morgan is 24 years old. She's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She's got a degree, and in the upcoming fall, she wants to go to nursing school in New York.
Dream big, baby.
Dream big, Nancy Morgan.
Nancy Morgan, dream so big, baby.
But first, she wanted to help the poors.
The poors.
The poors. The people that knew her called her idealistic, cheerful, friendly, trusting.
Aww.
Which is really awesome. Good for her.
Yeah.
But she was also an unmarried, single woman living alone.
How fucking could she?
I know. And the locals of Madison County really didn't take kindly to that.
Oh my god.
They thought she was kind of a slut. Yeah. True that. So the locals of Western North Carolina, specifically Madison County, it's a very libertarian area. They want to be left alone.
So they don't like sluts.
No. They don't like, well, one, they don't like government interference, which is exactly what the VISTA program was.
Yeah.
They don't like outsiders.
Yeah.
In general. They really only like, it's a very close-knit community.
Yeah.
And
especially don't like outsider VISTA sluts.
Exactly. And, you know, it's hard to say whether or not they were aware of this, but apparently Nancy Morgan did have a previous affair with a college professor that had ended in an abortion.
Oh.
So they thought she was a loose woman. She was a floozy. So, she was living in this little cabin alone in the mountains. Only one of the volunteers were local.
Yeah.
Everybody else was an outsider. And so they were really unwanted.
Yeah.
And in June 17th of 1970, Nancy's body was found nude, hogtied, and strangled in the back seat of her government car on an abandoned logging road near Hot Springs. Called Tanyard Gap.
Oh my god.
Yeah. The previous night, she had been missing for a few days. But the last time she had been seen, Nancy had been coming home from dinner at a fellow VISTA worker's house, Ed Walker. So she had gone up, she had driven up, had dinner with him, and was driving back to her home when she went missing. In this time, while her investigation is going on, there's an election for a new sheriff. Well, like, there's a general election.
Yeah.
But one of the sheriffs, one of the people running for sheriff had been sheriff previously. And his name was E.Y. Ponder. It stands for, like, Elmas Yates or something.
Oh, Missy ate.
Ate that. So anyways, so E.Y. Ponder, he'd been sheriff before, he lost, and then now that the re-election's coming up, he's really using Nancy's murder to, like, say, I'm gonna solve this case, I'm gonna get justice for Nancy.
If you vote for me.
If you vote for me. And it worked. He got back into office.
Oh my god.
However, he didn't exactly get to work on solving her murder.
No, he didn't give a fuck.
Not really. It was more of a nuisance for him than anything else because it drew a lot of attention to them. And by all accounts, Ui Ponder was kind of a corrupt sheriff.
Oh, sick.
They
That's exactly who we want on this case.
Exactly. He had dealings with moonshiners. Oh. He had informants all around town. He was well known for hiring his friends. Just kind of being shady.
Yeah.
And he, not only was he the sheriff, his brother, Zeno Ponder, was the county, he was the leader of the Democratic Party of Madison County.
Mm-hmm.
And he had run for sheriff, or I'm sorry, he had run for Senate, actually, and won. And then the United States government sued him for election rigging.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The U.S. government sued him?
Absolutely, they did.
Yikes.
So the Ponders really have a hold over this county, and people in their family hold pretty much like every position of importance in the entire town.
That's crazy, though. You gotta be real fucking shitty for the U.S. government. The U.S. fucking government. To be like, hey, that's too much.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
So that's who's handling Nancy's case.
Oh, love that for her.
Right. So Ponder had been sheriff for like 30 years in total. And one of his informants throughout the years was a man called Johnny Waldrop. And he was on probation, facing new charges for something else. And he happened to be a former neighbor of Ed Walker's. And that was the man, the fellow Vista worker who she had been going to see.
Mm-hmm.
And so suddenly, years later, Waldrop has new information that he's willing to testify.
Oh.
So on August 20th, 1984, a Madison County grand jury indicted Walker for first-degree murder, rape, and obstruction of justice.
Oof.
So this has been like 14 years since Nancy's murder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still gone unsolved.
Yeah.
Everyone kind of, I mean, the sheriff pretty much implied that Ed Walker did it, but that they didn't have enough evidence to actually charge him.
Mm-hmm.
But now that this informant has said, or this eyewitness, I should say,
yeah,
has come forward with new information, suddenly they proceed with the case now.
Hmm.
So it goes to court. By 1984, Walker was living in Florida. He had a wife. He had a young daughter. And because of having to be extradited back to North Carolina, everybody found out. He lost his job.
Yeah.
His wife lost her job. They lost their house. They lost two cars.
Mm-hmm.
So it really kind of messed up his life. He immediately got back out on bail and awaited trial back in Florida.
Yeah.
So he was home, but like, everything else in his life fell apart.
Yeah.
So on June 25th, 1985, the next year, the trial begins. And it lasted exactly 1 week.
That's it?
That's it. Waldrop claimed when he was on the stand that he saw Nancy tied up through the window and he went to help. But by the time he got there, she just died right then in that moment. And Walker forced him to help him dispose of her body, or he would die too. He says he was forced at gunpoint to like help him drive her car up to this place and leave her there. So Walker's lawyer, his name was Huff, his last name of course, is like royally grilling this guy on the stand.
Yeah.
And Waldrop is getting so flustered that at one point he kept asking the judge to go to the bathroom, and before he even said yes, he just walked straight out of those doors And then they looked out the window and saw him walking down the street. So the bailiffs had to go get him and bring him back to court.
What the fuck?
Apparently, like, Huff was like, who's got you, Johnny? Who's promising you these things? Yeah. It's not gonna work for you. Like, and he's just sweating. He's getting flustered. He knows he's lying.
Yeah.
And so obviously the court or the jury decided that Walker was not guilty. And he was acquitted. So this is now 15 years after Nancy's murder, and nobody's
responsible.
Nobody's had to face justice for it.
Oh my God.
So this is a cold case, but there is a heavily suspected killer. And we know part of this because of the book Metter on the Mountain, which is specifically about this case.
Oh.
And a lot of research went into that. But one of the people that was another informant for E.Y. Ponder was a man named Richard Johnson. And Richard is the son of a Hot Springs police chief, Leroy Johnson. So, one, he's police family.
Yeah.
And in Madison County, in the next town over from Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
And all around, just, like, not a good guy.
Yeah.
Like, for sure he's a rapist, larceny, theft, things like that.
Jesus.
And him and his buddies would pretty much just, like, round a woman up and abuse her.
Ugh.
So, in 1984, he was convicted of first-degree murder for poisoning his 5-year-old daughter.
Oh my God.
In a custody dispute with his estranged wife.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, this is not a good dude.
What the fuck did the 5-year-old do?
Exactly. It's sick. So, in 1998, he is interviewed at the Yancey Correctional Center in Burnsville. And his account of that night is that him and 4 other men were drinking beer at the French Broad River Bridge outside of Hot Springs.
Woof.
When they saw Nancy driving to Ed Walker's house for dinner. When she came back early in the morning, so must have been like past midnight,
mm-hmm.
She's driving back down this winding mountain road alone in the dark, and the men are still there.
Hmm.
They've been drinking beer for hours, sitting there waiting for her.
Oh my God.
And so they follow her in 2 cars. And as she's driving back, they box her car in. So they, like, go on either side of her and don't let her go anywhere. And then they forced her into their car at gunpoint.
Oh my God. For what?
So they took her up to a barn in Tennessee. Some abandoned barn, and tied her up and held her captive and just spent days abusing her.
For the fuck of it?
For the fuck of it.
Oh my God.
And this is apparently like the shit that they did. And so, normally, right, they're doing this with people in town.
Yeah.
And like those people know their reputation and like are probably too scared to say anything because of who this person is. But Nancy's different, right? She's an outsider. She's with this program. Like,
yeah.
The people that she works with notice that she's gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
And so he claims that they got a call from E.Y. Ponder. And he said, look, if you guys have this girl, you better let her go now because this is about to be a shitstorm.
Oh my God.
Now, Richard Johnson claims that her death was unintentional. He said she choked. He didn't ever give any other details. He just said that she choked. And he says that he wasn't present when she died. And so that's why he doesn't know. Right. And so that's why he doesn't know the details, because he would never speak on something that he wasn't sure of. I know, right? So, her death was unintentional, supposedly. So the next day, they put her body in the car and drive her to Tanyard Gap, where her body was found.
Oh my god.
Hey guys, it's Raina. I wanted to come on here post-edit to let you all know that Sabrina accidentally forgot to let you guys know that the sheriff told people that Nancy clearly accidentally died from an orgy or sex party. So, very sorry about that, but here you go.
I'm just, like, at a loss for words. Like, they would just, like, do that for fun to people?
Yeah, apparently there was nothing for them to do, so this is how they got their entertainment. Just harassing women and being disgusting. But it was also said, he also claimed that E.Y. Ponder knew within hours, not years or months,
yeah,
what happened to her. And just
kept it
and was content to blame it on an outsider instead of admitting that it was a local.
That's so gross.
Very gross. Very close to home. Very recent. It's not hard to see why things are the way they are.
Yeah. Woof.
Big woof.
Yikes. Man, I don't really know what else to say. I just keep saying those things over and over again.
It's a really strange and layered story.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on there. So if you want more information, check out Matter on the Mountain. I think it's by Dave Plinsky.
I'll do a little post of that book.
Yeah, good
and
call.
And I'll make a highlight of it on our Instagram so that any other books we mention in the future will be added to that highlight.
Well, besides that story, as you know, I've done one episode where I talked about Carly Russell.
Yeah.
And then I gave you an update last week. I've got a third, second update in the Carly Russell installation.
I didn't think there was gonna be any
more. So last time I talked about it, no charges had been filed. But officially she has been charged and she turned herself into jail for one count of falsely reporting to law enforcement officers and one count of falsely reporting an incident, which are both Class A misdemeanors. That's the lightest misdemeanor you can have. And it's only two counts. So she was released, like, the same day on a $2,000 bail, which is hardly anything.
Yeah, especially if she came from a pretty well-off family.
Yeah. So her max sentence for each is 1 year in jail and a fine up to $6,000.
I mean, I feel like some time in jail is warranted for faking being kidnapped.
Yeah, and the district attorney of Hoover has already said he plans on personally handling this case.
Whoa.
They spent a lot of time, money, resources looking for her.
And it hit national. I was at the skate park the other day and I was talking to some of my roommates about, you know, the episodes that we'd done so far. And I had told them about the Carly Russell case. And there was a person there at the skate park and they came up to me and they just heard the tail end of the story where I was like, yeah. And like, you know, she was like kidnapped and, you know, whatever. And so they were about to get up and leave because they're like, okay, I just got to the wildest part of the story at the wrong time. I got to go. And then I said, yeah. And then it turns out that she was lying. And they turn around and they were like, you talking about Carly Russell? And I was like, yeah. And they got so pissed. And like my roommates were like, whoa, why are you getting mad? And I was like, well, she kind of fucked it up for women of color because it was a big deal that she got national coverage.
Yeah.
For going missing. That's like one of the first times that's happened for a woman of color. And for it to come out that she was faking just shits in the face of every female of color that has to deal with being ignored by law enforcement or doctors or people of authority simply because they're a woman of color.
Yeah, that is something that I've seen a lot of videos about, and it is really frustrating. And what's even more frustrating, I don't know if you've seen it, but her mugshot was released and she's like smirking in it. It's kind of hard to
She
look
sees
at.
no, like, she sees no wrong in what she just did. So
No.
the Board of Psychology, don't give her one. Don't give her a certificate. Please. I feel like she's gonna just try and continue to go to school for that. Please don't. Oh
So
my
she's
God.
already got her degree in psychology. She was going
Okay.
for nursing.
Oh, okay. Then
Even
don't let her do
better.
that. My God. Jeez. Yeah, I didn't think there was gonna be another update on that, but I'm glad that there was. That's good to know.
Yeah, I'm interested to know if they're gonna
See.
like televise the trial, because I feel like
Yeah.
this is such a nationwide one that even though it's for something so small, like I
But I
feel like
feel like
there's a
at
lot of
this
public
point, I
interest.
feel like at this point they're so pissed that they might not. They might just be like, you know what, if people want to find out what happened, they'll have to look it up on Facebook or YouTube
Yeah,
or
even though
TikTok.
the police chief was kind of like, yeah, I know it's only 2 counts of misdemeanors, but I can only do what is under the law.
Yeah, that's true.
But it seems like they're fully willing to give her all that they can.
Well, I mean, I guess that's like kind of good. But I don't know. Then you could have the argument of she obviously was in a mental health crisis and like
Right.
needs medical attention. But
That's not something that healthy people do.
yeah, no, for sure. If I heard it and I was like, yeah, okay, it's probably not a good thing to do. So.
That's letting your intrusive thoughts win.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm like, I've had that thought before, but I just didn't act on it. Like,
Right. We just don't simply fake our own abductions willy-nilly.
you know, because then it like ruins it for the people who actually get abducted.
Very true.
You're taking the spotlight away, essentially. You don't want to do that.
And the money.
And the money. Our taxpayer money.
It costs money to search for
Our
somebody.
hard-earned taxpayer money is gonna go towards finding you instead of not paving our roads.
When you're at a Red Roof Inn.
Oh man. Well, I think we're starting to get a little loopy. So
We should probably do our little witchy bit and
yeah.
wrap this up.
Yeah. So today, in the future, I will be getting help from my lovely friend Carmen, who's a plant blogger and is a certified holistic herbalist.
Very cool.
Yeah. And she grew up in Louisiana, but she lives here now. She's one of my dear friends. I love her. She's crazy, but I love her. She has a whole Instagram page. It is T underscore MARINGOUIN underscore garden. Don't know how to say that middle part, so I just spelled it out.
I'm too high to follow that.
But anyway, she's gonna be helping us out in the future. I dropped the ball and did not contact her in time to get some information from her, but she's gonna be giving us some holistic healing elements and advice in the future. So be sure to look out for that. But for right now, we decided to keep it simple to start off and just kind of cover something that every basic witch already knows about, and that is sage.
Love some
Love
sage.
some sage. So one thing I really wanted to talk about is it's really important to, I guess I want to say, burn respectfully. So when you're using white sage, you don't want to be using it too often. You don't want to be using it for everything that you do. You don't want to be like using it all the time because it is being grown and sold in abundance at this point, and people are worried of over harvesting white sage. So use it responsibly. Don't use it for every little fucking thing that you do. Be
There are
respectful
many
about
types
it.
of sage.
Yeah, there's so many different types of sage. And white sage specifically is what's being really popularized right now in like really easy small kits. Like I've even seen them at fucking Five Below. First of all, probably shouldn't buy those. We're just going to start there.
Yeah.
Second off, if you do, just don't burn it all the time because you don't want to run through it super quickly. It's not something that needs to be used all the time. So
I want to start. Yeah, you need to be culturally aware.
Yeah, I want to start and preface by saying that. You can use white sage to cleanse a space or a person or just for general healing and clarifying energy. But today I kind of want to talk about like more medicinal use of sage rather than witchcraft use. So sage has been a main thing that's been used in history for a really long time. And it was used by herbalists externally to treat sprains, swelling, ulcers, and bleeding internally. It's kind of crazy.
Hmm.
And they made a tea out of sage leaves to help with that. And that also helped with sore throats and coughs.
It's very versatile.
Yeah, and it was used to, like, gargle. Like, instead of salt water, they would do sage tea.
Hmm.
Which actually sounds kind of good.
That sounds better than salt water.
Yeah. So, it was also used by herbalists for... Don't know how to say that word.
What is it?
Rheumatism. It was also used by herbalists for rheumatism, excessive menstrual bleeding, and to dry up a mother's milk when nursing was stopped.
Hmm.
So that's interesting.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So it was particularly noted for strengthening the nervous system, improving memory, and sharpening the senses.
You know, I've heard that it can help people. They're starting to look into how it could help people with Alzheimer's because it does increase cognitive function.
Interesting. That's super cool. Well, look at that. I learned something new while teaching you something new.
It's also very easy to grow.
Heard. Cool.
I like to keep a little plant on my porch for cooking purposes and for witchy purposes.
Hell yeah. Oh.
Throw a little sage in a pasta sauce.
Mmm. Yum.
Yum.
Well, that was episode 3.
So thank you guys for listening to 1 and 2 and deciding you like us enough to listen to the third one.
Yeah, and thanks for listening to the third one and keep listening to the rest of them. I've gotten a couple like messages and comments saying that you guys are really enjoying it and I love that. We love that. And if you love us and you keep listening, be sure to rate us and share us everywhere all the time. And if you have any questions, comments, corrections, concerns, suggestions, you can send it to greenwitchcottagepod@gmail.com. And you can follow our Instagram at @GWCpodcast. And I think that's everything. The book that we talked about a little bit today will be listed in a highlight on our Instagram. So if you want to see what that book was, you already forgot because I would too, be sure to check out the highlight on our Instagram. It should be up there by the time this episode is out. So
thanks, guys. We'll sesh with you next week.
Yeah. And remember to, what was it? What was our little thing?
Light up, look out.
Yeah. Light up and look out. Yeah. Remember to light up and look out. Boom.
Good night.